With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It's definitely a lot of hard work, but I think being able to find the right balance in that work.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Sharm, and in this episode, we continue the conversation with successful property developer and managing director of Avenor, James Paver. We continue our discussion on his property development journey of building the $413 million commercial space, how to balance your finances, how to structure deals so they are in your favor, and much, much more. Hey! We delve into his property development journey, and we find out whether he's faced any challenges along the way.
To be honest, it pains me to say it, but it's yet to come, I think. Except that's not me saying I think because I'm still quite young, I'm fully aware that there is going to be stuff that happens. We do take a lot of care and put a lot of effort into minimizing risk generally. And so we don't just go for any deal, and deal volume, I suppose, isn't our strategy. Accuracy is more our strategy. So being able to take our time, select the right deal, select the right approach, and then not overcommit ourselves to a level that means that we're exposed to something that we can't withstand. So I suppose in doing that, we minimise our risk. One of our projects at the moment, an example of that, I suppose, one of our projects at the moment is a residential tower development in North Sydney, Walker Street, and so that deal has been a slow burn. We started amalgamating individual units in 2016-17, and then we've amassed a 2,500 square meter site and done a deal with the next adjoining owners to create a 4,000 square meter site, and we've now got state approval for a 30 story tower. So it's a big, it's a big it's a success in that we've now got approval, but there were definitely moments through that journey where you feel like you've just burnt a lot of money on a site that's not going to come together. And so there were definitely moments through that where the risk was high, but I suppose persistence and the way that we set up those deals in the first instance meant that we minimised the risk of it not coming off us.
Paver talks us through some of the challenges that he faced to get these units to come together.
There's no residential tower sites in the North Sydney CBD. They are very, very strict on maintaining the commercial core. And so this is the only R4 high density residential site in the North Sydney CBD. And it's on the ring of freeway it's next to the ring of freeway, and so it'll have, permanent uninterrupted views of Sydney Harbour and the Opera House and the Heads. And so it'll be a very highly sought after, product once it comes online. And so I think part of that meant that the initial landowners, people who owned the units, they weren't going to move unless it was outright buying, essentially. And so to do that, we, mounted a war chest and had to go in and start, working through each unit.
We find out about his financial situation at the time and how much he was able to accumulate.
We bought 24 units. and then came to an arrangement with the adjoining, you know, there's three more lots to our north. And so I think for a planning outcome, it's a good outcome to have. So these are the only undeveloped sites or developable lots in that area. And so originally we were just going to go with ours, and those would have been a separate development needs to be pursued. But we came to an arrangement with the states essentially saying, oh, we'll put the planning across theirs as well, so that we all participate in uplift and we can redevelop the whole precinct so that there's no chance of isolation or anything.
Paver details what his initial vision was for their area.
It's a very obvious one. Around next door is a 22-storey resi tower. Over the road is another 23-storey resi tower. And around the corner, council's rezoning its own car park to be a 60-storey tower. And around the metro station is 200 metres away. That's going in at whatever that is, 50 storeys. And then the next one down, Winton's delivering the Denison Street, which is 40 something stories. Dexus just finished there, 100 Mount Street, which is similar height. So there's, and the North Sydney CBD, the council has lifted the height across the whole CBD. So there was this huge uplift. These are these little red roofed apartments that were built 80 years ago, and they're kind of falling down and the like. And so, and it's in the CBD. So we started off on it when I was still wrapping up the Vodafone tower, hunting around for what's next. And we started, and so as that was coming off, I started turning our attention to that.
Getting into development means that you'll need to invest your own capital into it, but the way the deal is structured can help you immensely.
So I suppose that's one example. And then one other one that I suppose another one that's been a slow burn but has been successful of late is our approach. So we, in 2014, we started having a go at, so Google was in the market as a tenant, and we approached the state government and said, oh, we want to put a tech precinct together for Google, and we're going to do it at Glebe Island. And so we had a consortium of John Holland and MTR, who run the Northwest Metro rail, and we had and then Leighton, we were still at the time, and Google, and we started doing that together. But Leighton Group went through a restructure. Leighton Properties closed, and so Google started off again with Lendlease, and the state took that asset to market. So that was the first crack at a tech precinct. And then around the same time, Atlassian were looking to where they could potentially anchor a tech precinct, and we were looking at Australian Technology Park with them. And then at the same time, or similar time, the state government was out with White Bay for the next round of tech and innovation precinct at White Bay. So that didn't go ahead. And so we've been involved in that world for a while. And it, I suppose in terms of, things not coming off, that for a number of years was just not happening for us. We were having a few false starts with different capital partners, with different tenants. And so we bid pretty hard for White Bay with some capital out of Singapore. And then Multiplex came in as our delivery partner initially, and then that process wrapped up for the open, for the market. And then, but we worked really hard with Atlassian, and then eventually, and you might have seen in the press over the last couple of years that now we've secured a site at Central Station, and we're anchoring a new tech and innovation precinct at Central Station in Sydney. And so, like similar to the Walker Street thing, is this roller coaster of you putting in a lot of energy and over a longer period of time, and then but then you work your way out of those risk positions into a position where then they start you start kicking some goals.
Having to invest your own capital into deals might make it tough when it comes to other expenses. So we find out how Paver is able to balance everything.
I suppose part of it, when we kicked off at first, we didn't have much of our own balance sheet. It was doing these sorts of structured things where we essentially bring the institutional knowledge of a tier one development firm being Leighton Properties, and then we white label that team, because we had a number of people from the Leighton team that Pete and I brought into our team, and then we started building out the team around us. And so we would white label that into non-development firms. So landowners who don't want to give up their asset or want to retain an asset on completion but don't have the development expertise, we will white label in and deploy our skills for them, and then participate in the profit or participate in whatever it is. So there's that sort of thing. And then other ones is, I suppose, you know, cash flow which is what you've identified, I suppose, is critical to it all. So we landed a $1.1 billion hospital project in Brisbane, which is Hurst and Quarter, run by Australian Unity. And so they were one of our first major projects which we started working on with them. And so I think there was a lot of that service-based revenue that in establishing some of these, and then in that we would structure some success fees. And so it would essentially be in exchange for deploying our, I suppose, IP on behalf of these firms, we would structure in which we could do in a particular market, call it Central Station. We could deploy that across a number of sites down at Central Station with a number of parties, and we would say, okay, well, if we partner with this group, then we'll participate, and then we're committed to that site and that. So I suppose that's how we kicked it off, and then that gave us a bit more firepower to be able to take a bit more risk, I suppose.
It has been an interesting journey for him, and we hear about the moment where everything just clicked for him.
It's a tough one. I suppose I feel like I'm coming into a bit of a moment around that at the moment. The next 12 months is going to be quite formative. Some of our revenues will be dropping over the next 12 months, but we'll be, I suppose, coming in over the next 12 months, which has turned my mind to the next strategic phase of our growth. And so I'm starting to build some more governance structures, bring some more skill sets in so that I can posture ourselves for raising capital, deploying capital, deploying our own balance sheet on a bigger scale. And so I think the aha moment is, I suppose, the last 4 years has been a lot of grind and a lot of, like I was saying, sweat equity. And then now, as I see the opportunity that comes from some of this, you know, having some balance sheet deploy, it kind of makes me think, oh, that is absolutely a ticket towards opening up a whole lot of opportunity that before I felt like wheels are spinning a lot. Now I can start seeing. So the way that I'm thinking at the moment is a bit different, I suppose. And I suppose that's an example.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into what James Paver would have changed early in his career.
I think working a bit smarter rather than harder could have helped.
What he is looking forward to in the future.
That Atlassian Tower at Central is like a 70,000 square meter office tower, which, you know, is part of that tech precinct. It's been on a very long journey. And so in 5 years, that'll be complete.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. We learned about one of the strong motivating factors was early on in his property journey.
When I was choosing to go and do property economics, I was just at a bit of a loss, to be honest, about what the options were at hand. I think part of it, I didn't want to do something that was just a placeholder standard thing. In fact, that's probably a common theme across what a lot of what I do. I don't I don't buy into just standard run of the mill, you know, living, I suppose. Or, and I'd heard a bit. I think I just heard from other people that property's good fun. I didn't particularly know what it was or how it works, and that I knew that you could make money out of it, and I knew that. And then I suppose part of the decision making around the decision to go from banking to development, that's probably part of what I can probably talk to, is that when I was at uni when investment banking, you've got a huge amount of people that have ended up there because they've done commerce law degrees and they're hyper competitive, and you know they're at school, they're highly intelligent people, and they're working really long hours, and you know they make a particular amount of money, and they're in a structured career progression that you are at the mercy of the control of a lot of other stakeholders and senior stakeholders that can probably influence your success or not. Property, I kind of formed this view, right or wrong at the time, that you're not in a space where, particularly in, I suppose, the early days of it, or in, you're not in a space where there is hyper-competitive commerce law guys who have got 99 or, in their high 90s UAIs and are sitting at their desk, I felt, well, but you can still make just as much, if not more, money, and you can, work less if you work smartly.
So book smart versus street smart. If you're street smart, you don't necessarily have to have all these qualifications and degrees and everything to get into property development, because it's about relationships, it's about hustle, it's about persistence, grinding, the hard work, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I saw some of those clients at Investec, right? And like a bunch of them had never gone to uni. Some of them, like that guy I was mentioning, you left school early. Some of them were... it's not a competitive industry. It's a really competitive industry, obviously. Like every man and his dog know about property and are an expert in property because they own a property, and so it's not that you get away from that, but I think it's that I was doing a lot of long hours in Investec, and I was made redundant there. And then at Leighton Properties, it was the same. It was working really long hours and in an institution, and then they, because of structural decisions that were made at a higher level, they decided to restructure, and then I managed to, strike an arrangement that worked well, that was part of a redundancy. And so then that was twice, and I was like, well, I'm going to take it in my own hands and do what I suppose I was always wanting to do, and start, putting things together. And that's, I suppose, where the thinking came from.
We talk about the idea of mentorship and his experience with people throughout his journey that can provide assistance.
I was lucky enough. So at Investec Bank, David Gonski was the chairman. And so when I was setting up Avenor, I'd reached out to him a couple of times before, and then I just went and caught up with him. And I suppose being able to just have a chat with someone like that gives you a really good insight into potential in business. I wouldn't say that he's sort of a mentor, because it's not like an ongoing thing. But at the moment, that's something that I've identified is something I want to build on. So I've started the process a couple of months ago, putting an advisory board together for Avenor. So speaking with some, executives and managing directors that I've come across over the years, I've started to do just to start piecing together who the right people are to put some strategic input into the firm, and then some governance oversight into the firm. And so speaking with a few people about that. Hopefully that comes along.
Paver shares some of his best book recommendations along with any other resources that might be helpful.
I've kicked off some business coaching at the moment as part of this, like I was saying, next 12 months strategic growth is we've got business coaching and advisory board and some new hires as part of that. But one of the ones that I've just started listening to is The Road Less Stupid. I've literally over the last couple of weeks I've been ripping into it, and it's essentially exploring this concept of how intelligent investors, and this actually rings true for those clients from Investec, where a bunch of those people had been bankrupt once at least, but sometimes a couple of times. And so The Road Less Stupid is about this concept where of avoiding dumb tax, which is where as a result of poor decision making, you make a loss. And so what is it that you can do to minimize, maintain, your revenue growth, but minimize the risk of loss by avoiding stupid decisions? And so I know the chapter I was on last night is talking about thinking time. And so they're talking about having a particular period in each day, or period of time in each day, short period, where you just sit and think about the big issues and actually accurately identify problems that need resolving and then come up with a strategy to solve them. I haven't started yet because I only did that yesterday, but it was interesting.
We find out the advice that he would give to a younger version of himself.
Yeah, I suppose I'd say do what you're doing. I'm kind of really enjoying what I'm working on, I suppose. And it's definitely a lot of hard work, but I think being able to find the right balance in that work. I think in the early days, actually, if I could talk about the early days a bit, I think working a bit smarter rather than harder could have helped. A lot of long hours, late nights, slogging away, trying to work through it. And then in hindsight, there wasn't many other people doing that. So maybe I could have shared the load a bit, I suppose. And then, and then surrounding yourself with the right people.
He shares with us some of the goals that he's most excited about achieving in the near future.
Definitely about building the firm and building the capacity of the firm for the funds management component, or I suppose the being able to raise more capital and deploy more capital, I suppose, and definitely building the team to supplement that skill set into the team is definitely something that's exciting. And then if I go to the end of that 5 years, definitely looking forward to having completed some major projects. So that Atlassian Tower at Central is like a 70,000 square meter office tower, which, is part of that tech precinct. It's been on a very long journey. And so in 5 years, that'll be complete. And so it'll be good to be able to, stand here and look at that and, see it as one of the most sustainable buildings in the world. I think that'll be pretty exciting, yeah.
So the last question I have for you is, how much of your success is due to your skill, intelligence and hard work, and how much of it is because of luck?
I would say luck. Lucky, the luck component of it is that I, born into a, good family and have a good set of, morals and surroundings. So I'm definitely very grateful for that, and I did nothing to deserve that part of it. But, since then, though, I definitely attribute it to a lot of, maybe 80% of it to the hard work component. The luck component of it might be that the redundancies that kind of force you to make a decision, if they didn't happen or they kicked down the road, then who knows what might have happened. Might be in a different firm, or might have just wanted, the golden handcuffs might have been put on, or it would have been too hard to get away. And so being able to get that nudge, I suppose, is definitely a help. But it's taken a lot of hard work, and it will continue to take a lot of hard work, that's for sure.
Thank you to James Paver, our guest on this episode of Property Invest Story. If you want to hear more about his journey and get a copy of the show notes on the website, head over to propertyinvestory.com/notes. The show notes will give you the inside scoop on the little gold nuggets of wisdom all our guests share from their backstory and all their overall strategies and philosophies. Plus, you'll get a copy of the advice broken down and shared in a quick and easy to consume format. Just head over to propertyinvestory.com/notes and download it today. Thanks for listening.